Thank you very much, Philip, for that provocative and insightful presentation. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Children's Ministry stream here at Hope 2. We believe that hope is rising with respect to a mission to children. We believe that there are seeds of hope in the present, and we have a great hope for the future. Some of that is captured in a short video presentation that we'd like to show you now. The video is called Today.
Today is a special day. Today, more than 350,000 people will be born and 150,000 will die. Today, we'll hurdle another 2.5 million kilometers around the sun and eat enough rice to build the Great Pyramid of Giza 6 times. Today is special because of what God is doing in it. Ever since God created the very first day, He has been shaping history and unfolding a story so magnificent that all people on earth need to hear it. His plan of seeking and saving the lost through Jesus unfolds through the entire Bible. Each day, the Old Testament pointed to the greatest event of all, the day when God rescued people. Through miracles and stories, Jesus gave glimpses of an upside-down kingdom that is unlike anything that people could imagine. A kingdom of humility, grace, generosity, and surprise. A kingdom where Jesus said, "You must be like a child to enter." If you look carefully at God's salvation history, God often chose young people to do His work. Samuel, as a child, heard God's voice when no one else was listening. Naaman's servant girl remembered that God was still at work despite the circumstances. David, a humble shepherd boy, became a great leader. And a boy whose name we don't even know saw what God could do with his 5 loaves and 2 fish. Becoming a follower of Jesus so often begins as a child or teenager. When the disciples struggled to understand the kingdom, Jesus explained it with a child. Today, 50% of all humans are young. Today is an extraordinary day. But for many, today is also a sad day. Today, more children will go hungry than ever before. More will be abused as slaves, laborers, and soldiers. Today, children are easy targets for advertisers and corporations. Many will struggle to get an education. And today, it's estimated that 1/3 of all children in the world have never heard about Jesus. But today, we are seeing God at work shaping children and shaping the world through them. Today, children are coming to Jesus across the world and learning how to follow Him daily. In many places, children are arriving at church of their own accord, being prompted by God. 20 children in one country have Bibles because their 10-year-old friend believed it was the best gift he could give them. A former child soldier leads a new life because he met a pastor with a football. He now leads a church. Today, children are caring for others and their world. Street kids in one city prayed and marched together to advocate for justice. Government and businesses have responded. Over 100,000 children planted trees to care for their environment. Today, children are discovering Jesus as they learn skills for life. Children are being discipled as they are coached in sport, in media, technology, dressmaking, and even robotics. Today, agencies and churches are partnering together and sharing resources more than ever before. Some denominations and agencies have made children a major focus for a year, for a decade, or even forever. More training strategies and resources for discipleship are spreading rapidly across the world. Each of these stories is a glimpse of real children and adults making a difference in shaping their world God's way. Children have always been a part of God's plan, but they haven't always been a big part of ours. Today, there are 2 billion children in the world. Children need to be a part of our plan. Today.
towards the end there, the narrative says that children are often not part of our plans and that they need to be part of them. For this next few minutes, I'd like to explore how the church has related to children in the past and how it might relate to children in the present and in the future. In mission thinking, we often say that there are many unreached people groups that we need to find and reach out to. And we would say that about children, but I think we would like to contend this morning that there are no unreached children, because if we are not reaching them, somebody else will be. When we are absent from the large conversations in our culture, others will sow the seductive seeds of self-love. Our society is offering children a toxic, false salvation through fashion, violence, sexuality, money, and other spiritualities. Time does not permit a fleshing out of that assertion, but for many of you, it will ring true. The stories and pictures that once filled their minds are changing. The Victorian values of popular children's fiction has now yielded to stories of magicians and vampires. Media figures such as Lady Gaga and Rihanna bring images of sexuality without content to younger and younger minds. Popular computer games dull the senses to the human cost of violence. Many of our children are reaping what they did not sow as victims of violence and sexual abuse, and as victims of the subtle spiritual corrosions of peer pressure. They despair as they are buffeted by images of perfection and beauty in our culture. The ideal life that they see there seems beyond their reach. The fruit of these broken dreams is despair. We are witnessing an epidemic of brokenness. At this point, I could bombard you with statistics, but for each of your nations, they might be different. And in this age of Google, you will often be able to find those things out for yourself. One of our desires in this section is to provoke questions, and we can't answer them in the time frame, nor should we, because often the question is releasing curiosity, and the curiosity that you have will take you to the answer. But think on these things. What are the psychological effects on our children of family breakup? What is happening when in all 30 European nations in the last 5 years, there's been a rise in substance abuse, alcohol, cannabis, and hard drugs amongst children and teenagers? What is happening in our nations when 1 in 4 girls is sexually abused? What is happening in our nation when 1 in 12 boys are sexually abused? What is happening in our nations when 10% of our children are in a consistent state of mental health breakdown? What is happening in our societies when 20% of our children at some point in any given year will be having mental health issues? What is happening to our children when they are bullied and assaulted? What is happening to our children when the advertising agencies of international capitalism target them as the consumers of the future? Faced with this bleak picture, we could despair. How are we to respond to this? It's time to awaken the mission imagination of our churches throughout Europe with respect to children. If we fail to dream God's dream about children, we are closing our eyes and minds to the love of children expressed in Jesus. When we neglect the child, we commit a kind of spiritual suicide. Why do we believe this? Multiple studies suggest that a very large percentage of decisions for Christ are made between 4 and 14 years old. A UK survey also estimated that 76% of adult converts pointed to a previous contact with Christianity as a child or young person. Research for the Anglican Churches of Canterbury in the UK notes that church attendance as a child or young teenager is mentioned by almost every adult active in church life. Active involvement of children in church life with specific and growing responsibilities also makes it more likely that they will remain in church. Philip refers to the demographics of Europe. One of the surveys that has been released recently suggests that the really devout believers in the Abrahamic faith are still having more children than the rest of the population. Their figures are in decline too, but they're declining slower. There's a possibility that in the next little while, religious voices will have a greater part in the conversations of our culture. But what are we to do? Because the reality is that many of our churches, our agencies, and our denominations have no vision to reach the unchurched child, and they barely have a vision about how to disciple their own. We need to reach to the past. We need to look to the past for wisdom for our future. The church throughout Europe has a rich heritage with respect to children. We call on you now to redig the ancient well so that hope and salvation can spring up again. What does the past tell us? Concern for children was a key value of the early church. They were against abortion and the abandonment of unwanted children. They would rescue and adopt the unwanted child in defiance of the popular beliefs of their culture. In the Reformation, Luther reminded us to support parents, noting that they were the apostles, bishops, and priests to their children. The German pietists broke new ground by educating girls in defiance of the cultural mores of their time. Zinzendorf, a Moravian pioneer of world mission, engaged children and young people in prayer. Anna, a 14-year-old in his community, led and discipled the girls and women of the Herrnhut community. Our history is steeped with those who took children seriously. Charles Haddon Spurgeon, a statesman of English Christianity, would not let trainee ministers speak to the adults if they were not prepared to work in the children's Sunday school. The presenting excuse today that it's not my calling would not really have washed with Charles Haddon Spurgeon. The Sunday school movement touched many continents through many different types of church grouping for nearly 200 years. He used the Bible as a literacy textbook. One of the pioneers, Richard Rakes, was a prison reformer. He started his Sunday schools partly because he wanted to rescue the children before the culture led them away into criminality. By the early 20th century, around 95% of children in Britain would experience some contact with the Sunday school movement as they grew up. As the cities of Europe grew, great need often emerged. That need was met by the Christian community. They built better houses with a toilet for every family rather than a toilet for 250 people. They reformed the prison system. They looked after the poor. And they created many of the institutions that we take for granted today. And many of those institutions were pointed at the welfare of children. They fed children, they clothed children, they shared values with them, and they offered education. The church worshipped Jesus by caring for the least of these. My father was the pastor for some years of an urban London church, which had been established by the pioneering social reformer Lord Shaftesbury. It contained a ragged school, so called because it sought to reach the poorest children, often dressed in little more than rags. The impact of this type of church engagement with children and young people would shape society. Wider literacy would mean more opportunity, and schools around Europe, started by churches, would remain even up to the present day as an important part of the educational infrastructure. But there's more to the story. The church engaged with children through wholesome play and activity. They promoted teamwork, friendship, and respect for others. It never happened alone. It was always a thread in the gospel tapestry. The book of Zechariah speaks of a city where the old rest at the edge of town squares while the children play. The church of the 19th century offered alternatives to drunkenness and violence. The result was large-scale Christian participation in the growth of organized sport. 12 of the original 20 football league teams in the United Kingdom were church teams. They included Manchester City, Tottenham, Aston Villa, Fulham, QPR, household names in the UK and often around the world. None of those teams started in a vacuum. The churches they came from were always engaged with the whole of the community. They were embedded in the life of those places. Are we embedded and in our being in the middle of our cultures, are we looking out for children? The church in Europe was community-based. It was a visible presence in the streets of the towns and cities. Community outreach was part of its reason for existence. The church promoted the welfare of the place where it found itself. It introduced as the body of Christ the presence of God in a tangible way to the people who were often living in despair. But the church was to retreat. Humanism opposed us in the schools. Communism derided our lack of compassion for the poor. Materialism wooed our children with the proper promise of happiness through owning desirable goods. We closed down our Sunday schools, and then in our desperation, we reached out again through youth ministry. We're now beginning to be aware that youth ministry is often too late. As we have sought to fulfill the Great Commission, we have made a great omission. We have retreated from the task of reaching the children of our society. It's time to admit them to our strategies once again. In the last 15 years, there has been a rebirth of thinking about Christian mission to children. The members of the Christian Compassion Coalition, Viva, have a bigger combined budget than UNESCO. I work for the UK-based 1,700-member Children Matter Coalition. We urge churches to take children more seriously in their mission strategy. Many of you will be aware of the 414 movement. They're seeking to raise awareness around the world about mission to 4 to 14-year-olds. I'm also part of the Global Children's Forum, which seeks to resource churches around the world with the kind of video that we showed you earlier on, and many other resources, 800 free resources. 70% of churches in the world don't have the resources that you and I would take for granted in reaching out to children. We've only just begun. The 21st century has seen the start of change, partly fueled by ease of communication via the internet. The church must be willing to weave a newfound mission to children into every aspect of our church life. There are so many opportunities. The religious education lessons, the midweek clubs, the specialist music groups, the football or sports training, the community games, the parent visiting, and the creative mind will take you on into many others. The list is long, but it reflects the simple connections that Jesus encouraged his disciples to seek as he sent them out two by two to eat with people, pray blessing for them, and they heal their sick. But we have a job to do, persuading ourselves as churches that we need to do this. What do these children and young people mean to our salvation history? Samuel, Joseph, Josiah, Naaman's maid, David, Daniel, Mary. Do we value what children understand about God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit? Samuel prophesied to the corrupt priests of his nation. Joseph shared his insights into dreams with kings and patriarchs. I could go through the whole list. Daniel defied the demands of idolatry. Mary, the mother of Jesus, accepted her destiny and proclaimed the coming of justice. I challenge you today, and we're not doing this from a place of haughtiness or pride, but I challenge you today, do we take children as seriously as God does? Do we believe that children and youth can be used powerfully in God's purposes? Do we equip their parents to nurture faith? Do we have a vision to reach the unchurched children of our localities? Are we concerned about poverty and need in our communities? The 12-year-old Jesus put himself in the midst of spiritual inquiry. He placed a child in the midst, held them up as an example of faith. Jesus attitude to children is instructive, and he was utterly disruptive of the thinking of his day. He told those whose faith revolved around knowledge of 613 laws that they needed to have the simple, trusting faith of the child. He told his amazed listeners that who believed that only the highest ranking angels saw the face of God, that the children's angels were ever before the Father. He said that children were his ambassadors and that to care for them was to worship him. He warned of judgment to all those who might stumble them. He put away the protectiveness of his disciples and not only welcomed and blessed the children, but embraced them. The language used here is the language of adoption. The key word picture that Jesus uses to help us understand the new nature of our relationship with God. This was provocative to his Jewish listeners and even more provocative to the Greeks and Romans who would hear the message in the coming years and who had a much lower vision of the child. I finish with this. Jesus gave children a new status and mandated a vigorous community that would reach out to the rest of the community. Children would be at the heart of that. We ask you with grace and humility as you gather over the next 2 or 3 days to be thinking about what children would mean within your special interest group. What does your special interest group have to say about mission to children in relation to the things that you are discussing? We want to provoke you and ask whether the church today and us as individuals actually are the friends of sinners. We would suggest to you that it's time to restock the imagination of a generation with the stories of Jesus. It's time to welcome the children again in the name of Jesus. Because when we do, Jesus comes and shows his character in our lives and theirs. Will we offer hope to the children of Europe? We believe that we can. And we ask you to join us to seek God for a new age of salvation for the children of Europe. Thank you very much.